daily news and analysis. We keep you informed and inspired.
This is World Today.
Welcome to World Today, a news program with a different perspective. I'm Liu Kun in Beijing. In this edition of the show, we discuss China's goals and ways in 2024. In the government work report delivered by Premier Li Qiang to the National People's Congress, China had set its growth target at around 5% for this year. The report said the country intends to achieve this by developing new quality productive forces, promoting innovation in the digital economy, further lowering the investment threshold in critical industries, and more. How ambitious is this goal of around 5% growth rate for China? Will China's ways be able to support the country to meet its goals? For these questions and much more on China's government work report, I'm joined by Dr. Yao Shujie, Chang Kung Professor of Economics at Chongqing University, Mike Basting, China Observer and Senior Lecturer at the University of Southampton in the United Kingdom. Also, we have Dr. David Blair, Vice President, Center for China and Globalization. Thank you all for joining me for this very important topic. Now, let's get right into it. The government work report delivered by Premier Li Qiang released a set of figures about China's economy in 2023. Growth rate of 5.2%, a surveyed urban unemployment rate of 5.2%, and also CPI rise of 0.2%. Let me start with Dr. Blair. In general, how do you view the growth of the Chinese economy in 2023, really? Doctor.
Well, the number that the number that the government is estimating is just slightly higher than the IMF's estimate of 4.6%. So I think in the range of 5% seems like a reasonable number for next year, which is a very high number for a such a mature economy as China. I mean, I expect many other countries around the world are happy to grow at 3% a year. I think the most important issue going forward is that this is a transition period. China is changing its growth model. It has, for the last 20 years, it's been based on growth in, first it was a huge growth in exports, and lately it's been a huge growth in infrastructure investments. Neither of those can continue to be a growth driver. They won't be growing faster than the overall economy. And then for economy to grow faster, it needs a growth driver. And I think what China can do and probably will do in the next 10 years is take advantage of all the investments that have been made in the past in technology, in manufacturing capability. But also the infrastructure has allowed the development of a highly efficient and highly productive small business sector that I see spreading throughout the country in the small cities and the villages. So I think that's likely to be the next step in China's development is moving toward that new growth driver.
Mike, what about you? I mean, we will, dive more into how China's prospect will be in this year. But do we have any lessons or, any policy that we can learn from in the past year in 2023? Because after all, the growth of 5.2% is pretty high for China, Mike.
Let's put it into context. I think that made a very good point. Let's put it into context. 5.2%, if you look around the world, countries and regions would bite your hand off for that. So, and 5% looks realistic. I think the key message going forward is just a very prudent monetary and fiscal policy and very quietly rebounding from the pandemic, which really did scar China. Like many other countries. So I think that's the key message that we're not going to see, and we didn't see major announcements on government stimulus packages. Obviously, local government debt is an issue. Unemployment is an issue. So I think it's just a quietly, steady-as-she-goes policy where 5% I think is realistic. It might be slightly lower than that. So I think that's the lesson learned, that we're continuing, again, as your previous panel said, in this transition, this new normal phase now where double-digit GDP is a thing of the past, is actually quite scary. Inflationary pressures come with that. And we're looking at high-quality growth. So I think re-emphasizing investment in high technology and perhaps the younger consumer base are slightly more innovative, more entrepreneurial, and encouraging private investment and going for high-quality brands. And in the area that I'm specialising in for quite a few years, have been now, in the area of fashion and fashion design, we're seeing that now. We're seeing the international rise of Chinese fashion designers, fashion brands. I think another bright spot will be electric vehicles, obviously BYD in particular, where China has really outpaced the world. And that's a huge growth area to be very positive about. So I think a very quiet process where the government will try to hand over more to the private sector and encourage private consumption as they have been doing in the last year or two.
Dr. Yao, so as these two gentlemen already mentioned, this year's target is around 5% again for China. What is your assessment of the goal? I mean, how realistic is it really for China as a matured economy, as Dr. Blair has mentioned?
Doctor? Yeah, 5% growth target for this year is still, for me, is still quite ambitious, but I think it's achievable. Why it is ambitious? Because Chinese economy is already very large. It's 126 trillion renminbi. And a 5% increase means that it would basically add another middle-sized economy in the world, or at least in some country rank at the 20th of the global economy for this kind of size. So the 5% compared to the past of 8% or 10%, it sounds relatively low, but in terms of the absolute increase of the national GDP, I think it's a tremendous big target. So it is still a challenge to achieve the 5% growth. And there will be a lot of policy to make sure that the goal will be achieved. And you can also see a lot of local government already stepped up the growth rate of 5 to 6%. It means that every locality, the province, the metropolitan city, in autonomous regions, they have to do very hard. Why it has to do very hard? Number one, the economy is already in a very high level. Number two, as my colleague just mentioned, you know, we are entering a period of not massive expansion, but high-quality economic growth. High-quality implies that the value added for every sector have to be increased, productivity have to be increased. But more importantly, China is very concerned about ecological and environmental quality. So we cannot, you know, expand the GDP by polluting to the natural environment. In the contrary, I think the country has very tough regulation about green development. So there is a big balance between economic expansion and environmental protection. And this is the real challenge. I think every locality have to balance the economy expansion and how to protect the natural environment by reducing emission of carbon dioxide per unit of GDP. This is the tremendous challenge.
As one of CGTN Radio's most popular programs, World Today provides listeners with a strong mix of international news and business. It delivers in-depth analysis of current affairs and one-on-one interviews, bringing you the stories behind the news, not just what's happening, but why.
Well, the government work report budgets the national deficit at 3% of GDP in 2024. Dr. Blair, what does this tell us about China's fiscal policy in this year? How did officials really come into this conclusion of 3% of GDP?
Well, as Mike mentioned earlier, the I think one of the most beneficial things that I saw out of the two sessions was the emphasis on fiscal and monetary stability, fiscal and monetary responsibility. The most dangerous thing which the government could have done, but which they haven't done, is try to have a huge artificial stimulus that keeps a few sectors growing artificially, but it's not sustainable in the long run. And I think it's very important that they realize that this will not work and that they need to, be, as I said before, move toward the sectors that are the future growth engines of the Chinese economy. Basically, you know, basically, as was mentioned before, China is moving up market in its production capability. I mean, I see it. 10 years ago, I think a lot of Chinese products were lower quality than a lot of products you saw from Western Europe or the United States. But now you look at cars, for example. I happen to own a Chinese brand car, a Geely, and it's a very good car. I mean, I'm not a car expert, but it seems to be very high quality. I've never had any problems with it. It's comfortable. It has all the modern conveniences, and it cost a half to a third what I would have paid for a similar car in the U.S. or Western Europe. That's a very good upmarket thing. I mean, I see like in phones, phone cameras, which I spend a lot of time taking photos. I see the Chinese products. I just bought a Xiaomi phone. It's better than Apple phone in terms of the cameras. So I think that's one of the strengths going forward. The other is China is in a better position to apply the new technologies, AI and all the electronic technologies to the manufacturing sector, to the real economy, not to some sort of gaming or social media or something that's not really productive. I think that Chinese factories will start becoming more and more productive and more high quality as they apply that technology. And as I mentioned before, the capabilities of average people around the country have been enhanced by building great infrastructure. There's 4G, 5G everywhere. There's roads, very good roads everywhere. There's probably the best railway system in the world. And so people can now take advantage of it in building small businesses. I've seen people, I live in Yunnan province, which is one of the poor provinces. And I spend a good bit of time just hiking around through villages and stuff. And I see the dynamism of people in those villages. They're producing a lot of stuff. They're not only feeding their own family and creating, you know, opportunities for their children, but they're employing, you know, 10, 15 people. And you multiply that by millions of businesses like that. That's, I think, the transformation we're going to see over the next 15 years, 10 to 15 years in China. The other good thing, I think, was that the emphasis on continuing the reform and opening up process. Continuing the emphasis on ensuring that there's a rule of law. I think all of those were very good steps. I was very encouraged by what I heard coming out of the two sessions.
Well, still on the budget of you know, the national deficit, Professor Yao, how do you understand this 3% of GDP? And as Dr. Blair has mentioned, is Chinese government, you know, really transitioning from a lot of investment on infrastructure to, is it diversifying the investment, or is it more moving toward consumption?
Investment, I have to say, is still a major driver of the economy that will not go away. You know, investment in the highway, in the, you know, high-speed rail, they are slowing down. Investment in the real estate sector also slow down. But, I mean, in the future, the investment will be in the, you know, the service sector. For example, service for the people, the elderly. And also the service, the high quality services for production. For example, nowadays lots of production lines are automatic. They use lots of robotics and also automation AI. So labor productivity in the manufacturing sector has been increased rapidly and it will continue to increase.
Mm.
This means China has to find more channel for investment to boost the economy, balance the sector, the locality, the city, and the countryside, and so on.
Mm.
There are still lots of potential for it. Consumption, of course. Why is consumption getting more and more important? Because people are better off, and people are spending the same amount of money, they can produce much more good than before for the traditional consumption items. Just the vehicle car, one of the colleagues just mentioned,
mm-hmm.
a motor car in China is lovely, beautiful, all functional and very high quality, equipped with lots of AI driven element in the car, but it is much cheaper than in the West, half the price for most of the model, and this is amazing. I mean, it means that the Chinese consumer will be able to spare some more money for other kinds of consumption, and for example, tourism, education, physical services, and so on. So the country is changed, the society is changed, including the consumption pattern and the consumption habit have changed.
Mm.
But it actually have a much higher requirement for the producers, to reflect what the consumer needs in order to drive the country forward.
Mm. Mike, what's your understanding of all this, especially about this fiscal policy for China in 2024?
I think it's very responsible. I think they certainly have the means to announce and implement major stimulus into various sectors and try to keep things sort of artificially high, as I think the panelists said, and they've opted quite wisely not to. So I think there will be investment in areas to boost consumption and certainly try to, I noticed the phrase they use, worry-free consumption, try to engender some sort of confidence building in the Chinese consumer, certainly those that are fearful of job loss, and younger consumers who are in a very, very competitive job market. So I think there'll be some investment there and some stimulus there to improve conditions and confidence. And also I noticed they issued some long-term bonds over the next several years, 1 trillion yuan, and again, major national strategies. So I think the government's policy, again, is very, very gradual, very, very gradual. And again, it's coming back to high-quality growth, high-quality brands that go international. And I've just written an article recently on the internationalization of many Chinese brands now that now appear in the top, most valuable 100 brand rankings, Brand Finance, Brand Z in particular, high-technology brands. And I can give you quite a few names. And it's a growing list across a lot of sectors. And so I think that really is the focal point, and the government will steer the economy more and more in that direction with mild stimulus and probably rescue certain local governments where debt really is that high.
Mike?
I think they probably will have to step in, yeah.
Mm. As Mike already mentioned, the government work report said China plans to issue 1 trillion yuan or about $139 billion of ultra-long special central government bonds in 2024 to support big critical projects and build up China's overall national strength. Maybe let me go to Professor Yao first. What is really ultra-long special central government bond, and why does China need it now, Professor Yao?
Yes, China is in the crossroad of upgrading the national industrial system and also the infrastructure system, as well as the AI automation. So that it still requires a lot of investment, to be honest.
Mm.
And it got to be led by the state sector and followed by the private sector. So issuing the 1 trillion long-term bond is a necessity to make sure that the key national projects, such as the you know the innovation center, the large project infrastructure, hydroelectric and also nuclear power and so on and so forth. These are the long-term condition for China to maintain steady economic growth. But it is a very important initiative. And as my colleague just mentioned, I mean, the 3 trillion yuan, the 3% of GDP deficit, actually China could be even more aggressive. But why China chose to just for 3% is because there is another concern about systematic risk, financial risk. If we use too much money to expand into the economy and lots of money are wasted rather than for long-term production build-up, then the investment could lead to future higher inflation. On the other hand, we can see the last couple of years, the Chinese CPI and PPI are really low. Even the PPI is actually negative.
Indeed.
So it means that there are scope for China to stimulate the economy by increased budget deficit. But the 3% is a rather responsible target for this. And this is why the 3% deficit, but it need to be added by the 1 trillion long-term bond, which have a very specific target to make sure this long-term bond is meeting the longer need.
Now, Professor, on that, I'm asking this for one of my friends who asked me, you know, is it a wise idea to invest, you know, as a personal investor on these ultra long special central government bonds moving forward? And if yes, what kind of bond, you know, will be most profitable?
China is such a large country. What kinds of bond is what will be the new emerging industries? For example, like material biotechnology, which would be good for the human health in the future, and the automation system, AI technology, and so on and so forth. The internet of industries is still growing, and also the new energy sector, like new vehicles, and also solar power, wind power, and so on. So these are still the emerging industrial sector that the government will be focused. And I think, as private investor, I think it would be good to focus on those areas because they have a long-term return. In the short term, maybe still some risk. But in the longer term, I think the payback will be pretty useful.
Very quickly, Dr. Blair, what do you think of these ultra long central government bonds?
I want to talk about the consumer side of those bonds. I think one thing that's caused problems in the real estate sector is that Chinese investors have not had many other opportunities to invest. Either the stock market, which has not done particularly well, or apartments, prices were going up very fast. So I think one advantage of these bonds is that they create a new investment venue for Chinese savers to save their money. And also, I really like the way the government's talking about putting them into real investments. The United States government has been borrowing incredible amounts of money, but almost all of it, very little of it's gone into investment. It's just been general government spending or maybe some projects where the politicians are using it to pay off their friends. But it's these bonds, I think, will be highly productive if they go into the real economy.
Indeed.
And they also create a more diverse investment sector within China.
Well, you're listening to World Today. We're talking about China's government work report delivered at this year's National People's Congress. We're going to a short break. When we come back, we'll continue the discussion. Stay with us.
Hello, I am Dr. Digby James Wren, a political analyst and international relations scholar specializing in China area studies. World Today offers unmatched in-depth perspectives on China's politics, economics, business, technology, and society. World Today's team of reporters and contributors provides valuable information from all of the world's major economies. I hope you can join me on World Today for the very best insights and news from China, on China, and help to build a better understanding of China's role in the world today.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Liu Kun in Beijing. We're having a panel discussion on China's National Government Work Report delivered at China's top legislature, the National People's Congress. We have with us Dr. Yang Shujie, Chang Kong Professor of Economics, Chongqing University, Mike Basting, China Observer and Senior Lecturer at the University of Southampton. Also, we have Dr. David Blair, Vice President, Center for China and Globalization. Now, still on this ultra-long special government bounce, the Wall Street Journal reported about it, and the report said this is only the fourth time China issues this kind of bound. The previous three times were, you know, the Asian financial crisis of 1998, the global financial crisis of 2007, and the initial pandemic outbreak in 2020. Then the Wall Street Journal report concluded that the very fact, you know, that the three previous periods such bond issuance each followed an economic emergency speaks to the deep sense of urgency that officials are feeling now. Dr. Blair, do you agree with this? Why or why not?
No, I don't really agree with that. I mean, as I said a few minutes ago. I mean, the Chinese investment sector needs to be diversified, and Chinese investors need to have a secure government-backed means of investment. And I think on that side, this is a very useful thing within the Chinese economy to create these government bonds, especially for retail investors. And I think we're seeing a transition in the Chinese economy. I know there's a lot of pessimism, but I think that happens naturally when we see a transition. We're moving away from the old model of low wage exports, and it's very good we're moving away from that low wage exports, especially the low wage part of it. And we're also, China's also made so many investments in infrastructure that it's probably got the best infrastructure in the world now. And there's probably not much opportunity for future investment in real estate. Private investment is up in China, and that's largely going into productive capabilities, which is a good thing. So I don't see this as a response to a crisis. It's not some sort of I think it's more of a transition to a longer term opportunity. One thing I do want to mention, though, in the past, a lot of bonds in China, especially corporate bonds, have been largely bought by banks. And the banks were just using that as a way to get around lending limits. So we have to be careful that these actually end up in the hands of retail investors rather than purely as a banking as a banking instrument.
Mike, what's your thought? Do you agree that, you know, the issuance of such bonds speaks, you know, to a sense of urgency, you know, among the Chinese officials? Mike?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
To a certain extent, I don't think I'd use the word urgent. I think there's certainly a need to continue with this transition. So we're looking at a more stable economy. We're looking at investment and investors who hopefully will start to accept the fact that longer-term investment with a more modest return, but still attractive return, is the way forward, and that will contribute vastly to a more stable economic situation. So I think that's the way I would look into this, and it's a very, very good idea to introduce this long-term nature to try to change the culture of investment in the country, where there has been perhaps it's been a bit too feverish, a bit too sort of get rich quick, particularly in property, and an element of that is good, but too much can be very, very bad. And perhaps that's one reason why the property sector is now slumping. People have been predicting this for a long time. bit of a bubble there for many, many years. So I think that it's a prudent measure that doesn't smack of panic at all, but just a very, very determined effort to, if you like, shift the economy quite significantly and permanently to longer term modest growth and modest expectations when it comes to investment. So I think that's the real positive take that I have on this.
Mm. Professor Yao, how do you see, you know, the timing of issuance of this kind of ultra-long bond, especially, you know, the comparison between this time and the previous three times?
Yeah, each time the government issued the long-term, the ultra-long-term, bonds have a fairly good reason.
Mm.
Of course, the previous time it was used as part of the measure to counter some sort of external shock or some unexpected shock like the COVID pandemic. But this time it's not the shock. I think this time it's China's desire to upgrading the national economy to the higher level. And as the later policy law USC, the budget deficit, the long-term bond or the local government bond, they will be targeting some very special issue, special project. This project, a large project, it will be quite difficult actually for the private sector, but it will be needing some help from the government to have this financial support to build up the future capacity. And building up the capacity is good for maintaining a steady economy growth of 5%. We set up the 5%, but how to do it?
Mm.
I mean, like the central government feel it need to have some sort of monetary and fiscal policy to support. And this is basically a financial tool to make sure that the 5% target could be achieved.
Mm. Indeed for that. Let's take a look at unemployment rate goals, because this is certainly related to everybody in a workforce. The government work report says China surveyed urban unemployment rate at the goal of around 5.5% in 2024. Dr. Blair, how challenging is it in reality? And to achieve this goal, do you think demographic group in China do you think needs the most support?
Well, my view is that China, like a lot of countries, has overinvested in university education in the past. So you have a lot of university graduates that have, you know, their major is probably not a very productive major in some cases. And so they're going to be disappointed at the kind of wages they get. They thought they were compared to non-university graduates who may be doing more productive work. So I'm not too worried about especially the urban sector of the unemployment, because I think that's a transition that the country needs to make. And I think I've seen a lot of building of vocational schools in the last few years, and I think that's a very good way to go. I do see a lot of sort of just anecdotally, I see a lot of stores and small businesses that people invested in, and they lost everything during the pandemic. Essentially, they went bankrupt. And I think we need to be thinking, I mean, the government needs to be thinking about how to efficiently, I mean, you don't want to just give them money, but you do want to create an atmosphere where those people can either get good jobs. Obviously, they're productive entrepreneurial people. They've done it in the past. Or they can start a new kind of business that allows them to succeed. So I think that's an urgent thing. I do want to say one more point about consumption. We talk a lot about boosting consumption, but it's very important that we realize there are two ways to boost consumption. One is by increasing real wages. So especially median real wages, people in the middle, they get more money, they see their wages going up, and they can spend more. That's what's been happening in China over the last 20 years, and that's a great thing. But the other way to boost wages is to boost consumer debt. U.S. wages in the United States median real wages have not gone up $1 since 1979, and they've fallen about 5% in the last 2 years. So the only way people can sort of keep up with the Joneses, they can, the only way they can increase consumption is by going more and more into consumer debt. And obviously that's a bad thing for society and a bad thing for, it's not sustainable. So I think jobs, but I really don't want to pay much attention to GDP growth. What's really important is wage growth. If people, average people's wages are going up, then it's a wonderful economy. If they're not, there's something fundamentally wrong. And historically, Chinese wages have been growing up fast. Now, the pandemic reset that, but I think that should be a big target going in the future, is increased wages so people can consume more naturally.
We're talking about wages. The goal of a CPI rise for China in 2024, or aimed inflation target, as set in the government work report, is around 3%. Mike, is this remarkable to you, since inflation currently is running at around zero? And how do you understand officials' consideration to set this at around 3%? Mike?
I think it's reasonable. If you look at the... Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
And if you look at the report and you look at the whole sort of package of measures, it makes a lot of sense. I think what will stimulate inflation, obviously, is more consumption. So it's around 0% at the moment, which is obviously not very healthy at all. But it's mainly, I suspect, got a lot to do with a lack of consumer confidence, the threat of job loss and general sort of economic insecurity. And then what the government are doing here with a number of policies is trying to shift that confidence in the right direction so that consumption returns to perhaps pre-pandemic levels. Possibly more with services, obviously certain sectors as well, growth sectors, new energy, high technology, electric vehicles. And that consumption will spur some sort of inflationary pressure, but a manageable inflationary pressure. So 3% does appear very, very modest. If you look at what's happening here in the UK economy, there's a far greater concern with inflation. So I think it does make sense, and some inflation, we have understand this, it may sound a bit bizarre, some inflation is good. Inflation means consumption, activity. People are spending more and saving less. And I think that, again, that's the shift that the government are trying to accelerate with this package. So 3%, I think it's fine. I think they'll manage that very, very carefully. They'll be absolutely sure that it doesn't go any higher.
Professor Yao, do you agree with Mike? And, moving whether drastically or smoothly, from the current level of around 0 to 3%. I mean, will that be remarkable to you, Professor?
Yes, I would think 3% for this year would be the ceiling, the top goal, rather than the general expectation. You look at the sluggishness of price changes over the last year, I think the 3% is something I think the government, bearing in mind, it will be the top target. So maybe 1%, 2%, I think that will be still very good for the Chinese economy to go from the low inflation to a relatively median inflation, so that producers, they can have more profit, which will allow them to make further investment. In consumers, they will be more able to spend money in different aspects. Because I think the low inflation last year could be due to people's reluctance to spend because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Some people already suffer because of the lack of income. But with the steady recovery of the economy, I think people, the wallet will be starting to expand again, and people will be more willing to spend. So the government have to prepare. There could be some inflation coming out. So this is why they set the 3%. But whether the 3% can be achievable, it really depends on how people are willing to spend and how the national economy is going to perform. This is exactly related to the employment level. A 5.5% again, is the target. I think something between 5 to 5% will give people's confidence, because employment is so important, irrespective of the wages. One colleague mentioned about the wages.
Right.
But the basic need is that people have to have a job first.
Indeed.
And which sector of the population distribution have the most challenging employment, I think, is the youth, the people who graduate from the university. The first job is very important. I think the first job last year, there's a significant delay because of mismatch in the market, because of the investment is slowing down. So some people find it difficult to get a job. But this is not a real detrimental issue. The real detrimental issue is that people have to change the expectation of employment. I mean, a lot of university graduates, they may not be too realistic in terms of their expectation in the job market. People have to develop an attitude that they have to match their skill, match their expectation with the real market. Of course, the government, the enterprise, the employer, they have to do their best to help create the job for the needy people. And this is a very comprehensive, very complicated issue, particularly relating to employment. Certainly, it's a big challenge. But I think China has managed so well, including the COVID period. China didn't actually have massive unemployment. So I have every confidence. I think the local authority, the employer, and also the people who are looking for a job, they will come to a more balanced view of how to get a job.
Well, wages and also, you know, prices of goods and services, these are things that people will feel at their everyday life. And as Professor Yao said, indeed, this is certainly, you know, the challenging issue. Let's take a look at, you know, the propositions or the policies that China was aiming in the government work report to achieve the goals and to tackle the challenges. The concept of new quality productive forces is one of the central propositions, especially new quality productive forces in the right place at the right time. So this is believed to be China's new idea to boost growth. In a previous study session of China's top leadership, Xi Jinping said that with innovation playing the leading role, new quality productive forces mean advanced productivity that is freed from traditional economic growth mode and productivity development path. It also features high tech, high efficiency, high quality, and comes in line with the new development philosophy. Now, Dr. Blair, how do you understand this? Because everyone's talking about it, right?
I think it's important to be clear what we mean by new quality productive forces. It's
right.
It's also tied into what we mean by talent and what we mean by innovation. There's a lot of innovation and growth that comes out of a few big labs and a few and research centers. You know, you may think at one of the top tech universities, there's innovation coming out of that. That's an important part. And there's also investment in new chips and things like that. That's an important part of the new quality innovation. But I think it's important that the opportunities to be innovative are spread throughout the country and throughout the population. If you look at one of my favorite examples is the Wright brothers. They lived in what was a third or fourth tier city in Chinese terms, Dayton, Ohio. They had a high school education and they invented the airplane. So you don't know where the new innovation's coming from. So I think the one thing I would stress in that is that you don't know in advance where the new quality development's going to come from. It could come from anywhere. So that's one of the reasons I really love the infrastructure investment that's been done, because it gives people opportunities to learn. And I'm seeing innovation in schooling for people in villages and in small towns. And so What I'm saying is I think we need mass innovation. We need mass changes. The guy who builds a small business, a trucking business or something, and employs 20 people, that's just as much innovation as some new chip. And we need both.
Right.
So I think the one qualification I have is, you know, only 25% of the population in the U.S., I'm not sure what it is here, only 25% of the people graduate from college. We should be paying attention to the other 75% and their talents and their opportunities and how they can be innovative and participate in the new economy, too.
Well, Professor Yao, how do you understand new quality productive forces, and especially what industries can this kind of forces be applied into at today's China?
The new quality productive forces is a concept that's raised by President Xi Jinping last fall in Heilongjiang. And why he raised the concept is because when he visited Heilongjiang, he found out that in the future, if China want to upgrade the industry in order to maintain or improve China's international competitive advantage and to upgrade China into a much higher level in terms of per capita output and also the national strength, the only way forward is to develop the so-called new quality productive forces. There is a very concrete definition of how the concept is given. It talks about the new means of production, new quality of labor, and also the new quality of output. So the labor, factories, and also the commodity. They have to be high quality in order to become highly competitive in the national market. It got to be high quality so that labor productivity continue to increase. It got to be high quality so that people's living likelihood could be improved all the time. And this is precisely what China needed now, because China traditionally we have been fairly well known of using cheap labor to produce low quality cheap product for export. And nowadays, if you continue to do so, I think China would be stuck in the low level of economic development, and it won't be able to become a rich country by anyway. So in order to become a rich country, an advanced national economy, you really have to focus on technology. So technology innovation is the key component in the new quality productive forces. Everything would be focused on upgrading high quality and creating the new emerging industry as well as the future industries. So these are the two things. The current emerging industry, we already mentioned, there are quite a lot of products that we see. For example, mobile payment, high-speed train, and also the new vehicle sector, internet for modern driving and so on and so forth. You mentioned that there are so many things that we see today. But in the future, there are also some other, futures industry. For example, the nuclear, the hydrogen energy, they are still in the government report. And also, biotechnology, which, human diseases could be cured by new medicine and so on. So these are the kinds of things that China is talking about. There are still a lot of technological bottlenecks. For example, like the chip industry. China
Indeed.
Is still facing tough challenges by the international competition. So China have to break through in order for the domestic economy to expand as much as possible, rather than restricted by the lack of technology. And this is, it's a dynamic evolution process and concept. It's not a static. It's not unchangeable. It's actually a changeable concept.
It sounds very exciting, and there's a lot to look forward to, if we can make real big progress in these areas. Well, we have talked about, the goals set by the Chinese central government for 2024. Dr. Blair, What are some of the external challenges China needs to overcome, and does China have that capability? Dr. Blair.
Oh, there are huge external challenges, as everybody knows. Just if you look at it from a purely economic point of view, particularly the European economy, I think, is in serious trouble. They would be having to change their fundamental business model anyway.
Mm.
But the war between Russia and Ukraine and the energy and the sanctions and that kind of stuff has made the European, especially the German situation, much worse. So export growth to Europe is probably constrained purely for economic reasons. United States is really in a period of slow growth. There's very little consumer confidence. So the two big export markets that China has traditionally relied on over the last 10, 15 years are going to be in slow growth. So rising exports to them, it can continue, but I don't see it as a growth sector. So export to Belt and Road countries, I think, can be a growth sector, but currently they're a small portion of exports. So they're kind of the future, but probably not the next year or two future. But even worse, I think, is the geostrategic situation.
Mm-hmm.
The geostrategic rivalry between particularly the U.S. and China is the worst I've ever seen. And I think that makes the external situation.
But Dr. Blair, do you think the Chinese government have the capability, you know, to steer China through the right direction in this geostrategic rivalry?
Well, if I were giving advice to the Chinese government, I would say, just wait. Mm-hmm. Worry about your own real economy. I think the emphasis on dual circulation, on growing demand throughout the country, is an important step in that regard. So for instance, in chip technology, you know, the usual estimates are that China is 2 or 3 years behind. Well, that's not so much. You can catch up. So I don't think it's anything that's an emergency. So I think the advice would be to be patient, wait it out. You know, we could have a big change in policy after the next presidential election. It's possible.
Well,
we don't know.
I don't think
it's something that it's quite bad now, but I've lived long enough to see things go from bad to good and good to bad.
Thank you, Dr. Blair. I have to stop you there because we're running out of time for this edition. Thank you all for joining us. We had with us Dr. Yao Shujie, Mike Bastin, and also Dr. David Blair joining us on this panel discussion. You can follow us for further discussions on the X platform at CGTN Radio. I'm Yu Kun in Beijing. Thank you for joining us. Bye for now.